This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up tomorrow, evangelical and social conservative leaders will be in New York City for a conversation with Donald Trump, the presumptive GOP presidential nominee. How did this meeting come about and what is the purpose behind it? That's what we're going to discuss with my good friend Bill Dallas, the CEO of United in Purpose, who I've been assisting in this effort to bring evangelical leaders together. Also, how important will evangelical voters be in the 2016 presidential election, and what will it require to gain their active support? We'll talk about that with researcher and pollster Chris Wilson a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And among the many leaders who will be at the meeting in New York City is Dr. Ronnie Floyd, outgoing president of the Southern Baptist Convention, the nation's largest Protestant denomination. I'll ask him about the outcome of last week's Southern Baptist Convention and what he hopes will be the outcome of our conversation with Donald Trump tomorrow. That's coming up on this Monday edition of Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, our topics there at the website. Also, let me remind you, coming up September 9th and 10th, the Values Voters Summit. It's an event you will not want to miss. To find out more, you can get all the details right there at tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. All right, several weeks ago, when it became evident that Donald Trump would be the GOP nominee, discussions began about engaging him in a conversation about issues that were important to the future of the nation. Now, I've not said much about this project because I did not want it to be misunderstood, and given the nature of the meeting, it had to be handled very carefully. Well, after the meeting is over, I'll be able to talk more about it. But this evening, as the media begins to talk and discuss this event, and no doubt we'll report on it tomorrow, I wanted you to get the genesis of this meeting. What brought it about, the goal for bringing these leaders together, and what we hope to be the outcome. So I thought the best way to do that is start where the conversation began between my first guest and myself. Bill Dallas is the organizer of the event. He's a very good friend of mine in FRCs. He's been involved with a number of projects that we've done jointly. In fact, his organization, United in Purpose, is a co-sponsor of this year's Value Voter Summit. Bill, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, Bill, first, before we get into this meeting with Donald Trump, just tell our listeners about United in Purpose.
United in Purpose, by nature of our name, is we're an organization that believes when you're united, you can have a purpose. And our tagline is transformation through unity. And so we work with a lot of partners, particularly social conservative organizations like FRC, to basically help transform the country so that ultimately the culture reflects more of a Christ-like fragrance. And we do that through technology, through big data, through a lot of marketing. And we realize that we can unify partners with that strategy to really be intentional to help transform culture. We can actually get results when we work together.
And an example of that is the I Stand Sunday event we did a couple of years ago in Houston, Texas, where we had about 7,000 people there on site and several hundred thousand churches gathered through the internet. United in Purpose was kind of our technology base for that, helping us get the word out. So, Bill, we appreciate all that you do at United in Purpose. But I want to go now to this meeting that the media is focused on that will take place tomorrow in New York City with Donald Trump, a conversation about the future of America. Give our listeners kind of the sense of how this started.
Well, you know, again, we look at, you know, you have to transform culture. There's a lot of areas to do that. Christians need to be engaged. And one of the areas they need to be engaged in is voting. Too many Christians sit home. In 2012, 39 million Christians did not vote. So the idea was there's going to be two candidates. And the first one that kind of rose to, you know, to the nominee, so to speak, was the Republican nominee in Donald Trump. And I thought to myself, well, a little over a month ago, as he had looked like he would be the presumptive nominee, is that we should get to know him. He should get to know us. And so the thought was bring all of these partners into some city and ask him to come. And what we would do is we would have a conversation. We would talk to him, talk about our concerns and issues. And in return, he could ask us questions. And one of the first partners I brought this to, in fact, Tony, I was thinking about the other night, I think the very first person I called up to ask, what do you think about the idea, was you. And I said, what do you think about doing this? And this is a nonpartisan effort. This is not an endorsement. This is just an opportunity to talk to him, to understand the issues, and we could do this. And so it started, and you and I remember talking to you, and then we brought some other partners in, and then Ben Carson came in. We're so grateful for him taking the leadership. We then decided, you know, let's get the word out and see what other leaders wanted to go. And I think I remember one of your first interviews, you started talking about, you wondered, could we get 200, 300, 400 leaders? And now we have over 1,000 people coming of all the major ministries, churches, organizations all around the country. In fact, we have a waiting list. So many people are coming in. And the opportunity now is for us to listen. Because remember, Christians are a force. Right. When we band together, we can change culture, whether it's in the voting booth or whether it's in the schools or whether it's in the family or whether it's in the media or entertainment. But we're starting here right now because we've got an important election. When we band together, we can be a force. So one other thing, Tony, I want to say, and I want to just, you know, this is a shout out to Dr. Carson because he's the one that ultimately made this happen. And one of the great things is he called Donald Trump personally. And he said, Mr. Trump, can you be with us for 2.5 hours? And that's what's so great is Donald Trump said, yes, I can be there for 2.5 hours. And even this last week, you know, it gets tighter. You got a campaign. It's, you know, so many things happening, so many pressures, which I can appreciate. And Donald Trump and Dr. Carson going back and forth. And even this last week, because I remember it was my daughter's birthday. We're at Great America, which is an amusement park, and it's noisy. And saying, okay, we all set. Dr. Carson once again called Mr. Trump and said, you've got at least 2 hours. I'm going to be on site at the hotel for 2 hours. And we said, that is. And so when I heard that, I was just so excited because normally campaigns, you got 30 minutes here, 45 minutes. You're going from one to the other. But again, Dr. Carson, what a great man. And that he was able, you know, to get Donald Trump's word. And Dr. Carson said, when I talked to him on the phone before he went on a trip, which he's just got back from Europe, he said, nope, he's going to be there for 2 hours. And that just did my heart well, that somebody, you know, holds to integrity what they say they're going to do.
And the idea here, as we began this conversation, I remember the first conversations we had about this, is there are many evangelicals in this country, social conservatives, that want to be for Donald Trump. I mean, they see the alternative out there. They're concerned about the future of the country. They see very clearly what's happened in the last 7.5 years, but they're not there yet. And so the idea was, as you said, this is not an endorsement. This is not a campaign rally. This is an opportunity to have a candid conversation about the issues and the vision. You know, I've often concerned that, you know, the GOP candidates, they want us looking at, they want us driven through the rearview mirror, meaning that they're chasing us with somebody like Hillary Clinton or Obama. But what we want to do is look through the windshield at the vision they're casting. And I think this is an opportunity for him to cast the vision that he has for America.
You know, and one of the great things about this, and as we started, obviously, you know, as the event gets closer, then you're starting to talk to the campaign staff. And obviously, like I mentioned, Dr. Carson was in conversations even last week with Donald Trump. But one of the things is, okay, so how is this going to be set up? And, you know, is this a gotcha session? And we said, no. This has to be fair. And it's got to be fair both ways. We're not there because Christians need to not always be perceived as angry. We want to be conceived as winsome, respectful, but we're serious about the things that are important to us. So one of the things we said, no, this is absolutely not a gotcha. We're not trying to make somebody look bad, but it's also not a session where they're pre-planned questions that the campaign would give us, say, and say, ask these, so that they're softball. No, it's got to be real dialogue because that's what the Christians want to know. And by the way, Tony, you know this. Christians are incredibly filled with grace. And if you're honest and you say, well, I don't know about this, or I'm still, you know, processing this, or I'm learning this, we have incredible grace. Right. It's when we feel like people are manipulating us that then we put our, you know, our heels in the sand. We say, well, wait a minute, that's not fair. And that's what this is important, is that as long as we can have that open, fair dialogue of real questions, we'll go somewhere together. But let's do this kind of in partnership in this conversation. Again, this is, again, a nonpartisan event. In fact, we're going to be inviting the presumptive nominee of the Democratic side to have the same type of conversation with us, which will be Hillary Clinton. And when we first put the invite out to Donald Trump, it still wasn't decided then whether it would be Bernie Sanders or it would be Hillary Clinton. And so it was not the right time. We're going to ask her to sit down, the same type of thing, and talk about the same issues that are so important to us as conservatives, particularly social conservatives, because we need to have those conversations.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Bill Dallas, the CEO of United in Purpose, joining me. We're talking about tomorrow's meeting with Donald Trump, the conversation that's going to take place between him and evangelical social conservative leaders. Bill, you stress something here. It's not a got you session. In fact, those who have been invited have been carefully screened from us, not the campaign, from us to ensure that there are no, you know, folks that are just there, never Trump, that want to just blow something up. There's so much money and time that has been invested in this, and people are coming from across the country. It is a genuine effort to try to close that gap, if at all possible. And I don't know the outcome yet, but I'm hopeful that maybe the evangelical community, and I include myself in that because I haven't made a decision, that we can find something we can hold on to that will help us be more comfortable with Donald Trump as the GOP nominee.
Yeah, and you know the thing about, you talk about the cost. I mean, this is a kind of a last-minute thing in some ways. It was not originally planned in the United in Purpose budget, and it became an incredibly costly event. In fact, part of it, Tony, is, as you may know, or actually you remember this, is we were going to originally do this in Texas. We had a gentleman that said, have it at my ranch, and the cost would have been very minimal. But Donald Trump, based on the schedule, said, we appreciate, says, you need to do it in New York, and if we do it on this date in New York, I can make it work. And this is, again, the discussion with him and Ben Carson. So we put the thing together. New York City, very expensive city, and it's cost a fortune for us to put on, but not just us as an organization, and you're one of the sponsors, which we appreciate, FRC being one of the key people, and you said, look, we'll help also underwrite it. But what I think about is not only the major leaders, you think about David Jeremiah and Greg Laurie and all the major people you've thought of over the years, Dr. Dobson's going to be there, but I'm thinking about the pastors and individuals that are coming from a small church in Florida of 200 people. And $1,000, $2,000 because of the plane ticket, and hotels are so expensive, and we're not underwriting any of that. We're paying for the food, but they're having to spend so much money to come because they want to hear a real, honest conversation. Because I was thinking to myself, what would happen if the candidate just kind of blew in and just said a couple words and left? Here, not just the cost that everybody's put in, but these people that have tried to figure out how to make it work, right, so they can, because they're concerned about our country, and that's... I'm so grateful for them putting that commitment into it.
Bill, the last question, 45 seconds. What, or let me say, how would you describe success? What do you hope comes out of this meeting?
Really, the success is exactly the title of the event, a conversation, that we would have a true, honest conversation. We would get to know Donald Trump better. He would get to know us better, and the issues are important to us. It's as simple as that.
All right, Bill Dallas, we will see you tomorrow morning in New York City.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, Bill Dallas, CEO of United in Purpose. We're going to talk more about this tonight, this evening. I'm going to have Chris Wilson's going to be coming up next. We're going to talk with him about the importance of evangelical voters. How significant are they? They're very significant in the primary. How significant will they be in the general election? And what will a candidate have to do to get that support? Then Dr. Ronnie Floyd's going to be joining us, one of the foremost pastors in America, outgoing president of the Southern Baptist Convention. We're going to talk with him about tomorrow's meeting. And on the backside of this meeting, later this week, we're going to be talking about what came out of it. I'll have some of the folks that were there as my guests. So we're going to completely keep you informed and let you know whether or not that conversation took place and whether or not it was a constructive conversation. My hope is that it will be. All right, don't go away. On the other side of the break, we have Chris Wilson joins us to look at the numbers.
Do you enjoy history, museums, pandas, and national monuments? And are you looking to gain work experience at a Christian organization in the heart of our nation's capital? If the answer is yes, come spend a semester as an intern in Washington, D.C. with a Family Research Council. You will get a chance to experience the rich history and culture of our nation's capital and attend congressional hearings, events, rallies, and lectures all over D.C. Further, you will develop your skills in research and writing about the sanctity of life, marriage and family, religious liberty, and many other policy issues. Family Research Council's internship program includes free housing just a block away from Capitol Hill and the Supreme Court, as well as a paid stipend. As an intern, you will gain invaluable public policy experience in a professional work environment under the oversight and mentorship of FRC experts and scholars. To learn more and apply to the program, visit frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. You know, the charitable gift annuity concept is more important today than probably ever. It is something that you have heard me talk about for many, many years. And right now, for now, the tax code is still allowing charitable organizations to establish a charitable gift annuity so that you can be guaranteed permanent income for the rest of your life. Don't waste any time. So many of you have IRAs, 401k money. Peel off a piece of that. Establish your charitable gift annuity so that you have a portion of permanent income that you know is never going to change for the rest of your life. Would you do it today? Call AFA Foundation, 800-326-4543. Extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. Extension 345.
Marquis Laughlin is founder of Acts of the Word Ministry and host of the radio and online show The Moral Dilemma. He challenges believers to develop a biblical worldview through dramatized illustrations and interpretive readings of the Bible.
They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Marquis Laughlin is sure to be an entertaining speaker this year at the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th. Space is limited to 400 attendees, so make your plan soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 1, followed by option 2. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And we hope to see you there.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. All right, as we've been talking about a big event taking place in New York City, and it's really a precursor of a huge decision that awaits the American people this November, and a large segment of the voting population, which identify as evangelical social conservatives, they're going to have to make a selection for the next president of the United States. Now, if the last presidential election of 2012 is any indication, the evangelical vote will once again play a significant role in the outcome. Now, from the looks of it, both candidates, I think, have their work cut out for them. I do not think many evangelicals are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But right now, many evangelicals have not made up their mind as to whether or not they will support Donald Trump. How important of a voting segment of the population will evangelicals be in this election cycle? What does the Republican nominee, presumptive nominee, have to do? Well, joining me now to answer some of these questions is the CEO and Director of Research of Analytics and Digital Strategy for the Wilson Perkins Allen Opinion Research. And I said that all in one breath, Chris Wilson. Chris, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate you having me on.
Always like to pick your brain because I think numbers, well, it was the hardest class I ever took in my graduate work of statistics, but knowing the numbers can tell you a lot. What are the numbers telling us about the November election?
Well, if you extrapolate from primary turnout to total general election turnout this year, it would be on about par with 2008 at around 62%. Compared to 2012, which was 58.6% to be exact. So that's a lot was made of Republican primary turnout increasing, and it did, but there's been a lot of studies done since then in that most of the voters that turned out increased primary turnout. For instance, in Iowa, where, and I should probably just as a disclosure, full disclosure here, I was Ted Cruz is director of research and analytics, so I don't come at this from an unbiased place. But in Iowa, you look at overall turnout, it went from 121,000 to 187,000. But if you look at figures provided by the state party to Politico magazine or Politico newsletter paper, 95% of those caucus goers had previously voted in one of the past four presidential elections, and almost 80% voted in three of the last four. Now, that's important. It means that even though turnout increased in 2016 in the primary, they were just people who had voted in the general election in the past. And the same held true. Similar studies were done in South Carolina and Florida, where you had in South Carolina only 8.4% were new voters that came out, and in Florida it was 6% that were new voters.
So these were kind of folks that were holding back in the last election cycle. They had previously voted. They weren't like new to the whole voting game.
That's correct. They just had not really turned out in primaries before. And it's one, I'd like to think that what we did for Senator Cruz and the targeting of these voters had a lot to do with it. There's no question that Donald Trump excited a lot of those voters. And if you take on a state-by-state basis, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, other candidates in the race excited these voters. So there's a lot of things. When you have 17 candidates in a field, when you get started, it is, and probably by most accounts, one of the most impressive field of candidates in the history of Republican politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to attract a lot of voters. But even at that, when you look at, if you extrapolate from what occurred in the primary, we're still only looking at a turnout that's projected to be on par with 2008. Now, that's not to say that 2008 isn't a big deal, because it was. Obama did a fantastic job. I mean, I really give his campaign credit in terms of motivating new voters. So right now we've had approximately 60 million votes cast in the Republican and Democrat primary, more votes than Republican primary. 30,788,000 voted in the Republican primary through the last election last Tuesday. On the Democratic primary, 29,700,000. So it's about 51% to 49% overall. But that's exactly what it was in 2008, 60 million. So it was the difference in 2008, it was 38 million on the Democratic side. So they lost 8 million, and only 22 million on the Republican side. So we gained 8 million.
So there appears to be more energy on the Republican side this cycle than in 2008.
Oh, no question about it. And I think, again, that is what the primary field had. We had real conservatives in this race right through the end. I mean, it was a Ted Cruz, Donald Trump head-to-head going, or not head-to-head. He still had John Kasich in it. It's a shame it wasn't a head-to-head. There's my bias coming out, forgive me, when we got toward the end there. But from an overall just extrapolation of the electorate, yes, there was more excitement, and it caused those voters who had only turned out in general elections in the past, and I mentioned by the three states, Iowa, South Carolina, and Florida, where the study was done, and it created an excitement that brought them out in the primary.
All right, Chris Wilson, let me ask you this question. When you look at those numbers, you talked about how these were voters that had voted in the past, hadn't participated in primaries necessarily. What do the numbers say about evangelicals? Was that a bump up as well? Did we see more evangelicals in this primary?
Well, the answer is yes, because you have to, because you saw so many more Republicans in the primary, and evangelicals tend to be more Republican than they do Democrat. So just based on that alone, yes, there was a higher number of evangelicals that turned out. But, Tony, I think it's an important distinction to draw in terms of what an evangelical is.
Mm-hmm.
Because the challenge with exit polling
is
that it is a self-described evangelical. If you ask a voter whether or not they're an evangelical, and what we determined, and we really started to classify these into two groups, evangelical activists and evangelical traditionalists. And we found one of the greatest indicators of whether a voter would support Ted Cruz or Donald Trump was church attendance. And so we began to further classify the evangelical vote in our modeling as those who, based on their overall church attendance. Now what's interesting is, even though you could even classify based on theological understanding of what it means to be an evangelical, to witness, to bring someone to Christ, and it is, that was less of an indicator than how often they attended church.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chris, I'm going to get you a hold right there, because we're up against a break, and I want on the other side of this break, I want to come back and I want to talk about, all right, how important will evangelical voters be in the 2016 presidential election, and what level of support does Donald Trump need in order to be victorious against probably what we, well, against Hillary Clinton. We're going to talk about that with Chris Wilson when we come back here on Washington Watch. Again, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. But don't go away, because we're coming back with more after this.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
You know, we certainly live in some uncertain times. We have political volatility, if you can call it that, or political uncertainty for sure, and volatility in the markets. We've all seen that. Sometimes it's volatility on the upside. Sometimes it's volatility on the downside. Uncertainty in so many things, particularly in our tax structure and those kinds of things. I only bring that up because it's so important that we understand now more than ever about how important it is to plan. The book of Proverbs reminds us of how important it is to plan. As a matter of fact, the NIV version of Proverbs 21 indicates that we should plan, because without planning, it surely will lead to poverty. But beyond that, we have a biblical obligation to be good stewards of our finances. How do you plan in such volatile times? Where do you even begin? Well, it's important that when you start your planning, you look at what things are today, because that's the only thing certain that you know, and plan as if that, in fact, is going to be the circumstances for years to come. It's important that in the midst of all the uncertainty, of all the political volatility, and all the volatility in the markets, that we sit down and come up with a prudent, wise plan, that before we put it into action, we lay before the Lord and make sure that we are praying about it and looking for His guidance.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, I'm going to continue my conversation with the CEO of Wilson Perkins Allen Opinion Research, Chris Wilson, who, in my view, one of the best pollsters out there, tracks things, knows the numbers, can break them down, and it has a lot of insight. All right, we're talking about the evangelical vote going into this fall's election. How important is it? And Donald Trump, who is the presumptive Republican nominee, what level of support will he have in order to be victorious? Chris Wilson, welcome back. Thanks for hanging over on the break with us. All right, help me answer those questions.
Well, there's a lot wrapped up in there. I will do my best to answer them and throw a lot of numbers at you and try and keep your listeners from falling asleep. So you look at 2004, the last time we won the presidency, evangelicals made up 27% of the overall electorate. In 2008, when Obama won, evangelicals made up 23% of the electorate. Now you go to the next off year, and they made up a quarter, 25%. So they're up 2 points. 2012, Obama-Romney, back down 2 points to 23%. And then in 2014, when we take over, we win the Senate, or we take over the House, it's back up to 26%. So overall, that, which is the highest it's been since 2004. So I think that shows you the percentage evangelicals make up of the overall electorate. When it exceeds that 25% of the vote is when we win. It happened in 2004. It happened in 2010. It happened in 2014. Now, one of the things I want to point out there, just to show you the importance of what this means, is one of the things that Senator Cruz talked about over and over again, is the 52 million evangelicals that stayed home in 2012. And what that is extrapolated from, it comes from Wheaton College. Wheaton College has a Center for Evangelicals in which they estimate that 39% of the United States population, this comes from Gallup polling, is an evangelical. Well, that's how you arrive at it, because if in 2012, if 23% of the overall vote was evangelical, there are 129 million votes cast, That means 29 million of those, 29.6 million, were evangelicals. And if 39% of the population is evangelical, that's 83.8 million, which means there are 54 million, I think I said 52 earlier, forgive me, 54 million evangelicals that stayed home. Now, Pew uses a tighter screen. They say only 25% of the population is evangelical. But even at that, that still means 24 million evangelicals stayed home. You can see very quickly how important the evangelical vote is. Now, let me go back to your question, since I gave you through a bunch of numbers at your listeners, and they're probably all switching around for other stations right now, so I apologize. But the evangelical vote is the only thing that separates this election from 2012. Turnout with evangelicals would have to jump from 53 to 80% to have a result on the general election flat outcome. So assuming everything was flat and evangelical vote in 2012, everything is flat from 2012, and assuming a 2008 number, because remember what I said, if you look at what happened in the primaries, it's the greatest analogy is 2008. Hillary Clinton would win in a landslide, 318 electoral votes to 220. Now, to get back to your question, but if you get 80% turnout with those who identify as evangelicals, and you assume that they vote 80-20, which is about what they end up, Republican-Democrats split, they end up evangelicals in general election split their vote about 80-20. The Republican candidate would win 275 to 263 votes. And the states you would flip, and here's what's fascinating about it, Tony. You'd flip Virginia, you'd flip North Carolina, you'd flip Ohio, you'd flip Florida, and you'd flip Colorado. So what does that tell you about the importance of the evangelical vote? And I think it shows how absolutely essential it is. And this is one of the things that we had started to do on the Cruz campaign was building out an analytical model of those evangelicals that stayed home in the past. Because if you get it back to the level that it was in 2004, or you get close to the level of the electorate it was in 2014, you're able to win the Electoral College 275 to 263.
So, Chris Wilson, let me wrap this up as we're about out of time. The evangelical vote, even though we're seeing strong turnout from non-evangelical voters in this election, you're still saying that they're going to be a very important portion of the voting population if Donald Trump is to prevail.
That's absolutely right. For Donald Trump or any Republican to win, and let me make this clear, this is not just about Donald Trump. It's about Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. It's about whoever the Republican nominee is for Senate in Florida. It's about Ohio and Colorado, where we have a chance to pick up, Republicans have a chance to pick up a seat there. So it's about Donald Trump, but it's also about keeping the House, and it's about keeping the Senate. And that's why it is absolutely essential for Republicans to understand the importance of the evangelical electorate in our as a part of our base. Because if Republicans start to ignore evangelicals going to the general election and just assume that they're going to turn out and be there for the Republican candidate, they're wrong. They were wrong in 2008, and they were wrong in 2012. Evangelicals did not turn out at the level they had in the past for Romney. They did not turn out at the level they had in the past for McCain. And that's why it's absolutely essential that Donald Trump, but Republicans at every level of the electorate, every level of the ballot, recognize the importance of including evangelicals as a part of their overall campaign strategy.
I'm not sure they understand that, quite frankly. I mean,
I'm not sure they do either.
Well, I had the conversations in 2012 where I remember distinctly someone involved in the Romney campaign saying, well, what are your people going to do? Are they going to vote for Obama? No, but they stayed home, and that's the
right.
Real risk. All right, Chris Wilson, we're out of time, but I want to thank you again because, as always, I find it fascinating because I think the numbers don't lie, and it's very insightful, and I want to express my appreciation for you joining us this afternoon.
Hey, I'm always happy to hear. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, Chris Wilson, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. He's worth following. He knows what he's talking about. All right, don't go away, folks. We're back with more on the other side of this break.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we'll visit on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is the United States Marine Corps Memorial, also known as the Iwo Jima Memorial, built in 1954 and the largest bronze statue in the world. Stephen McDowell, who's the president of the Providence Foundation, a historian, will join us all along the way, answer questions, talk about the people, the places, and the events in our nation's capital, and then on to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. In addition, we'll go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to join us for this separate trip, which just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. For all the information on either of these tours, just visit us on the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, this is in September. Go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
In these summer months, our children aren't at school, and that means lots of free time. Join with 1 million moms to stay current on any new TV series that might prove harmful. Always remember to have filters on your family's mobile devices, and be aware of video game content before your children play. You can stay up to date on this at 1millionmoms.com. Sign up. Speak up. 1millionmoms.com.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to vote for candidates that stand for biblical principles and biblical moral values, and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger, a group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. Healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. Healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about our topic today, but there's also other resources there for you. I mentioned earlier in the program, Values Voter Summit coming up September 9th and 10th. You can register, find out who the speakers are going to be. Great lineup. Dr. Bill Bennett, the recipient of our Leadership Award this year, he'll be there. So again, TonyPerkins.com. If you're not already receiving our daily updates and our legislative alerts, keeping you informed on what's happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom, that too can be found there at the website, TonyPerkins.com. And also, let me remind you that this program is made possible by partners like you around the country who understand the value of having this information. We do not receive any government money. We are sponsored and supported strictly by folks like you. So if you'd like to be a partner with the Family Research Council and Washington Watch, again, you can find that at TonyPerkins.com. All right, we've been talking today, focused specifically on the meeting that's going to be taking place in New York City with Donald Trump. Now, Christian evangelicals and social conservatives, we have a decision to make as we move toward this general election in November. Who are we going to support? I am of the opinion, and I know there are some that have counter opinions out there, but I disagree, that, you know, there might be a time when we shouldn't vote. We should stay home. I believe as Christians, we have to do the hard work. A lot of that hard work's done in the primary when we actually get behind candidates we can support. But even when it comes to a general election, we've got to work through this because we leave our imprint on the country. And that, as I was talking about earlier, is what was behind this effort to have a conversation with Donald Trump, is can we bring, you know, his campaign and evangelicals closer together or foster a better understanding? I don't know. We're going to find out, but that's obviously our goal. Well, one of my good friends is going to be a part of tomorrow's meeting. He is the immediate past president of the Southern Baptist Convention, the nation's largest Protestant denomination. In fact, they wrapped up their annual convention last week in St. Louis, and he handed over the gavel to the incoming president. But he's been a great friend of mine for some time and for the Family Research Council, and I'm honored to welcome back to the program. Joining me now is, as I mentioned, the immediate past president of the Southern Baptist Convention, senior pastor of Cross Church in Arkansas, Dr. Ronnie Floyd. Ronnie, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for this incredible privilege. It's always wonderful to be on your program with you.
Well, I know you have taken the weekend to try to recover from a very intense week last week, and I was not able to be there, but all of the reports were that it was a phenomenal gathering of the Southern Baptist leadership from across the country. And just take a few moments and fill our listeners in on the high points of what took place last week.
Well, let me sum it up in this regard, Tony. You know, when I had one of the leaders of our convention who really has been to multiple conventions for years and years, he came up to me on Wednesday night and he said, Ronnie, I have never seen a situation the past 2 days where both days could have gone south so quick, but God stepped in and made them two back-to-back historic days in our history. Now, when you are, you've been around since 1845, that is the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yeah, not me. I hadn't been that.
So, yeah, exactly. Since 1845, that's hard to even make history. But God so moved, Tony. And I really believe it's for a lot of reasons. I believe that we have truly worked diligently. We have prayed. We have fasted. We have believed God. We have been unashamed. We have been committed to the Bible as the Word of God. And while we have tremendous needs within our convention of churches that now is comprised by 51,441 churches and congregations, there are also some incredible things that are happening. And through the biblical truth shared on Tuesday morning in what we categorize as the presidential address, called The Stakes Are High. In fact, they can see that address, or they can even read the text of the address on RonnieFloyd.com. But I would urge them to do so, because what it does, it frames the entire week, but it also frames where we are in the country, which is so many of your listeners so much care about. And that's why I love being a part of the Family Research Council. And in this, it led us into, which was part of my message, Tony, because the Lord started transitioning my heart towards some matters regarding racial unity in America. And we had a racial unity panel comprised of ten pastors from across the Southern Baptist Convention, of which some of them were obviously of all ethnicities. And one of the premier leaders of that I asked to come in was the president of the National Baptist Convention, USA, which is the largest African-American convention, Dr. Jerry Young, whom I have gotten to know, and we've been together on 3 or 4 occasions. And he spoke for 12 to 15 minutes. And then, of course, Marshall Blaylock spoke for 12 to 15 minutes, who's the pastor at First Baptist Charleston, talking about the incredible triumph that happened in Charleston, in the midst of the tragedy, and it broke. It really changed Marshall's life and ministry. We're talking about the oldest Baptist church in the South, and watching all that go on, and he's been with me before. But that 55-minute segment in the Southern Baptist Convention was literally historic. That has never happened. I mean, you know the heritage of Southern Baptist in our origin regarding this entire issue of slavery. But in 1995, under the leadership of Richard Land and many men like him in our convention, our executive committee, and so many others, we issued a formal apology to all of our African-American brothers for anything that we've ever done. But still, even though 3 years ago, two years before I became president, we elected our first ever African-American president, Dr. Fred Luter of New Orleans.
Right.
Still, though, while the work was strong within some of our churches, it's just never been highlighted like that. And it's gained national attention that led to the adoption of the framing of that became the framing of the adoption of a major resolution, of which your own Shannon Royce was a part of this group from the Family Research Council. People that help you all the time, like Mark Harris and Matt Staver and others. I mean, and we had a stout group of 10 people that served on that committee, and with that we adopted a resolution regarding the Confederate flag with sensitivity, I might add, not directness, but it was an incredible moment. And we're talking about, that was a significant day. And then that night together we convened with thousands and thousands of people to call out to God for our country and the future of our nation for about 2.5 hours. And then on Wednesday, just in an unbelievable day of unity, all expressed through the presidential election, that after three ballots, after two ballots, we saw God step in before the third ballot. And I mean, it was incredible. And it was all because of the activity of God and the leadership of his leaders and the leadership of his people.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, my guest, Dr. Ronnie Floyd, talking about last week's Southern Baptist Convention. I want to transition just a moment to tomorrow's event in New York, but I want to comment on something, because I was back home during the weekend down in Louisiana, and often when I'm down there, you know, I'm just, nobody really knows all the relationships I have. So we were having a discussion about the Southern Baptist Convention. Someone asked me if I'd been there. I said no. And your name came up. And this was actually, I was having a conversation with a black pastor. And he said, you know, I really like him. You know what drew me to him? And this is what I think is at the heart of all you just described. This is what I believe has been the cornerstone of the success of your presidency at the Southern Baptist Convention. He said, you know what really I like about him is his emphasis on prayer. And yeah. You know, you and I have talked about this. I believe that is, in fact, the beginning point. It shouldn't be the end point. It is the beginning point to both birth and guide everything that we do. So I commend you for your focus on bringing the Southern Baptist and others. You've been willing to cross the line and speak to other believers about the essential nature of prayer.
Well, thank you, Tony. And I think that's one reason that you and I have really had our hearts joined some, is because you're not the typical guy that leads an organization that is trying to bring change. And you are, and thank God for that. But what sets you in balance is this whole element. If God does not prevail, then all of my work is in vain. If God does not step into the nation, and I would just urge all of the listeners today, we need to really, really, really strongly call the church to repentance, so the church can call the nation to repentance.
Right.
And we need to pray like never before.
Well, speaking of prayer, a lot of prayer as well as preparation has gone in tomorrow's meeting with Donald Trump, a conversation that we envisioned. We had Bill Dallas on earlier, and he and I were talking about the origins of this meeting. Started out, we thought we'd have 400 people. Now we're going to have over 1,000 with a waiting list of social conservative evangelical leaders that want to be there. Because I think there's such a hunger. I think people want to be able to be actively supporting someone that they believe in that's casting a vision. And they're not there yet. I think most of the people coming are coming looking for answers, looking for a way to bridge that gap that's there. Let me ask you about this. What is your expectation in coming to this meeting in New York?
Conversation. That is what drew me. Called together by men beside myself who have to this day endorsed Mr. Trump. Really, that's not the goal of the meeting. It's just, hey, we want to sit down and we want to have a meeting with one of the presidential candidates. and dialogue about what matters to us, and to hear him dialogue with us throughout the lens of media, throughout the lens of different perspectives, and commentators. I mean, what is it? You know, Tony, I think it's just undeniable for anyone to say, well, you know, this is not something that we should do. I mean, listen, you can't read the Bible and believe those words. I mean, you look at Daniel's life. I mean, Daniel, he went to Nebuchadnezzar when Nebuchadnezzar called for it. Nebuchadnezzar was not a God follower. And, I mean, we need to open ourselves up to the candidates for the office of president, whether it's Secretary Clinton, whether it's Mr. Trump, or someone else. And if they desire to meet with us, from my perspective anyway, I think we as Christians need to sit down with them and converse with them and represent our Lord, represent the Savior, represent the Word of God. And, you know, I did a webcast this past week with Tony Evans. Tony Evans says something I don't think I'll ever forget. He said in that webcast, which we were talking about the country, he said, my perspective is this. There are two possible solutions. One is God's, and the rest is nothing more than human opinion. So it is my responsibility to go with God's solution.
Well, and
that's a wonderful word that all of us need to hear.
And we get that obviously by prayer, by knowledge,
absolutely,
understanding. But we're not going to get there if we refuse to have the conversations, all right? If we just say, like you said, never, you know, God can't use this situation. I will be very candid. This is not the this is not the outcome I was looking for. I thought we had a wonderful field of candidates, many who come from our community that are professing evangelical Christians who have track records on the issues, and not just one or two. There were several in this campaign.
Right.
So.
Absolutely.
Not the outcome that we wanted, but we are where we are, and I think we've got to work through it and to the best of the ability for this country, for our families, and to be faithful witnesses to the truth. That's our first and foremost, we're citizens of the kingdom, the eternal kingdom, and that's the way I look at it. And then secondly, citizens of this country both require us to be involved and engaged. We've got about 45 seconds. I want to ask you this. What is it that you're looking for most in this conversation tomorrow?
Oh, well, that's a big question. I really want us to be able to lay up on Mr. Trump what really matters most to us. And what he does with it, obviously, he will be accountable to God and accountable to the country for. But I think if we play games and we just simply go in and be what we at times can be. I mean, we need to just bear our heart to him. And I think that's where we need to leave. We need to leave knowing at least he's heard us. And I want to know that he's heard us. And if that happens, then I leave it all to the hands of God.
And that's a good place to leave the program today, in the hands of God. Dr. Ronnie Floyd, as always, thanks so much for being with us. And let me again congratulate you on a successful tenure as president of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Thank you, Tony. The blessings on you.
All right. Dr. Ronnie Floyd, I'll catch up with him tomorrow in New York. All right, folks, we're out of time, but I want to thank you once again for joining us. And be praying for tomorrow's meeting. Join me in doing that. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.